world. Our final speaker of the afternoon is Sweta Chaudhary, who, as I say, has joined us from Stop the War National Office, and then we'll open for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. And thank you all for being here today, and thank you to Newcastle Stop the War for organising this really important and timely meeting. And I'm so pleased to be speaking alongside Roger and Asif, who are just amazing speakers. So please don't be disappointed in what I'm going to say, but yeah, really pleased to be here. The speakers before me, and I was here for the last bit of the Palestine session as well, they've spoken about the utterly dangerous and volatile situation we are in terms of escalation of wars and arms spending. I mean, we all know what's happening in Lebanon, and Israel's barbaric military strikes there this week has killed almost 1,000 people now, if you're just checking the news. And it's just, they're not numbers, like Asif says, you know, they're real people like us who are just gone like that. Like, they were alive yesterday and they're just gone now for no reason or no fault of theirs. And Gaza is something I don't even want to talk about anymore, actually, you know. I'm livid about it that we're still having to call for a ceasefire after a 1 year of a genocide being televised and being seen on social media. And whether I can call it a failure of the movement or not, I don't know, but we haven't been able to stop it because the politicians just wouldn't listen to us no matter what we do. And yeah, it's an utterly kind of desperate situation, not just for them, but for people who care about peace and justice, I think. And yeah, like Asif said, we just have to keep going. But yeah, I don't know how to stop it, but we have to keep going. And while these horrors unfold in the Middle East, we are also facing the worsening situation in Ukraine, which is in the third year of a NATO-led catastrophic war. The current crisis in Ukraine, I don't know how many of you are following the news, is about whether the US and Britain will enable Ukraine to use their long-range missiles to attack deep into Russian territory, risking an all-out war between nuclear-armed Russia and the US-led NATO allies. And for the first time since this Cold War, we face an actual risk of a nuclear confrontation. Yet the despicable Labour government continues to argue that it will arm Ukraine for as long as it takes, risking even more lives and sustaining this dreadful threat of a nuclear war instead of pushing for a peace process to end the war. This week at the UN, Biden, Starmer and Zelensky and a whole number of world leaders push for more arms spending as well as the change in the use of already existing weapons in Ukraine, particularly the British Storm Shadow missiles, which they now want to be used to be able to target the Russian military deep into Russian territory. In every modern war that we've seen, including the ones that Asif has mentioned, including Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and Syria and just you name it, we know that despite the claims made by governments about the smartness of precision-guided munition like bombs and missiles, smart weapons have made war safer only and only for the military and have put civilians at greater risk. We have seen that in Afghanistan, Iraq, and all the countries that Asif has mentioned, and we've seen it in Ukraine and Russia recently and in Gaza. Smart weapons waged from a distance have a really high risk of mistakes, and their effectiveness and safety with respect to collateral damage depends entirely on the quality of intelligence and communication that underpins the decision to use them. Yet our government has every intention of allowing British Storm Shadow missiles to be used from Ukrainian soil, knowing very well that the extent of lives that would be lost if they're used in this war, and they've seen it for the past 3 years, and yet they're allowing all these long-range missiles to be used from Ukrainian soil now. And not to mention that it will literally bring Britain directly into any firing line in terms of retaliation from Russia. It's also becoming increasingly evident there is no military solution to the war in Ukraine. The US and the UK know very well that Ukraine is losing the war on every front in the last 3 years, and then that Russia is advancing on the Eastern Front at quite a considerable rate over the recent months. And Ukraine has not been able to deal with it despite all the military support it has got from all the NATO allies. Providing arms to Ukraine will not only prolong this war and increase the probability of a nuclear war, but a permanent ceasefire and a negotiated peace deal is the only way forward. And we know that from all the wars of the past, that eventually there has to be a peace process. So why not start it at the very beginning? Why continue these wars of attrition where only innocent people die? And of course, troops on both sides, but the casualties are always more more and more civilians. I mean, at some point there will have to be a peace negotiation, because the only people who are suffering in these conflicts are, you know, Ukrainians and Russians and Palestinians and Lebanese working class people, and obviously the troops on both sides. We know this for a fact, that none of the wars that NATO has been involved in, and Asif mentioned that as well, that none of the NATO-led wars have resulted in peace and security in those countries. And this includes the Yugoslav war, the war in Afghanistan, and the intervention in Russia. We know from these three wars that, you know, any NATO-led intervention has never led to peace and security in the countries or in the region near those countries. The idea that NATO will bring peace and security in Ukraine is just not true. NATO is nothing but a war machine to further the West's imperialist agenda, and we need to recognize that a new approach to foreign policy and international relations is needed, and NATO has absolutely no place in it. The situation in Ukraine is absolutely critical now, as it is in Gaza and Lebanon, yet we can be rest assured that the Labour Party will continue to advance the Tory policies on matters of war, peace, foreign policy and arms spending. Keir Starmer has made it clear that the support for Israel, which lost the Labour Party so many votes at the election, is going to continue. He's also in the forefront of urging the US and European countries to allow Ukraine to use long-range missiles within Russia. His solution is to send more weaponry to Ukraine and allow it to be used in more circumstances, regardless of the dangers of further escalation between nuclear powers and of extremely high human and financial cost of fighting the war. There is a very different attitude to money for war than there is for relieving poverty. And again, like Roger and Asif said, that the next day after denying winter fuel allowance to the elderly in this country, they pledged £600 million to Zelensky to continue their war for as long as it takes. British military aid to Ukraine since the war began adds up to almost 8 billion. I mean, I don't even know how many zeros are there in that number. Labour's foreign policy is not about fighting terrorism or promoting democracy, as its ministers try to proclaim. It is about promoting the needs of British imperialism in lockstep with that of the US, including military interventions and huge levels of arms sales. If that means supporting a terror state like Israel or refusing to countenance a ceasefire and peace talks in Ukraine that goes with that territory. Then there is the threat of war with China and Iran, which are intertwined with these current conflicts. Israel's attacks on Lebanon could lead to the intervention of Russia and Iran, like, again, Asif mentioned before, that, you know, it's just not a war between Israel and Lebanon anymore, you know, as the war in Ukraine and Russia is not a war between them too. These are all proxy wars between the West, and then Iran and Russia and China at some point will have to intervene, I guess. And many people also don't talk about the AUKUS pact, which we campaigned for, and I mean, campaigned against since the pact was finalized, I think, 2 years ago in 2022. I can't remember the year. But if you don't know about the AUKUS pact, it's a military alliance between Australia, US, and the UK, where they're trying to make Asia-Pacific the new theater of conflict. It's like the Asian NATO, if you may call it, you know. The pact is a direct effort to counter the rise of China in the Indo-Pacific and includes cyber warfare, artificial intelligence, and underwater capabilities, as well as long-range strike capabilities, which we know are the most dangerous things in any warfare. In terms of nuclear weapons, AUKUS includes plans to set up an Australian nuclear-powered submarine fleet brokered with the US and Britain, and as CND rightly points out, spreading nuclear technology is at the heart of this pact, which deals not just nuclear proliferation, but it is a direct breach of the NPT. But you wouldn't see anything about it on the news or in newspaper articles, or nothing being taught in universities about the dangers of these new military alliances that are coming up, where we already have NATO, which is the most dangerous military alliance ever. We still have that in place when it should have been dismantled like 30 years ago, but yet they're creating more and more military alliances around the world and making it a more dangerous place. My final point is that the West's support for Israel's genocide and the war in Ukraine highlights their damning hypocrisy on the climate crisis. On one hand, they keep prattling about the perils of the climate breakdown, yet they fail to acknowledge the mounting concern about the long-term effects of these wars. These wars are just a glimpse of the larger military footprint of wars and the military-industrial complex. military emissions are so high that they're 182 times higher right now than it was in 1850. I mean, it's not just numbers. The amount of pollution and the amount of the amount of carbon dioxide that is released into the air because of the military industrial complex is just, you can't even comprehend it, that on a day-to-day basis how it's affecting the planet, how it's affecting people, more so in poorer countries, because we maybe don't feel it on the day-to-day basis here. But look at Bangladesh, look at Pakistan, look at India, look at all the African countries in South America, the flooding, the climate change, the droughts, you know, it's happening at a rate that, you know, if it goes on for a few more years, you know, nothing will be left of us to kind of live our lives. But, and the military plays a major role in it, and never in those COP, whatever the climate change conferences are, the military are never held accountable for any of this. I mean, they're always inviting the General Secretary of NATO to lecture about how they're trying to control their CO2 emissions and how, you know, they're trying to make warfare more sustainable. There is nothing called sustainable warfare. End of, period. I mean, what is sustainable warfare? But we don't read about it. We don't know about it because there's no data that is released to kind of let us know how bad it is. So what can we do to fight all of this? I think the task of the anti-war movement is first and foremost to ensure that the Labour government and their allies don't succeed in their militaristic aims, whether it's in Ukraine, whether it's in Gaza, Lebanon, or elsewhere. We need to make sure that, you know, they have to change their foreign policy and they have to change their attitude on how they secure peace around the world. And it is never through a military intervention that any country has ever been able to secure peace anywhere in the world. We've seen with the Gaza demonstrations that, you know, we can mobilize the numbers we need to make that change. We've gone on from 5,000 people at the first protest to 750,000 people coming to our demonstrations at one point earlier this year. We have been out in force for Gaza for a year, and we have been campaigning for Ukraine for a peace process for 3 years now. And I think very slowly our voices are being heard now, and we know that because recently at the TUC conference, every union kind of voted for the recognition of a Palestinian state, for a complete arms embargo against Israel, and to hold Netanyahu accountable for his war crimes. And that, I think, is a major... I think the anti-war movement has played a major part in kind of mobilizing support for Palestine and against the war in Ukraine within the trade unions for the past 1 year. I think all our activists around the country, you know, have fought so well in their branches that eventually I think the union bosses have had to give in and say, you know what, we can't ignore these issues anymore. And that, I think, you know, we have to see it as a victory, because there's only so many smaller victories we kind of get in the movement, and we got to celebrate it and kind of see how we can magnify it in the coming months, especially with Palestine, because it's an absolute desperate situation now, and we cannot afford an all-out war, although it looks like there'll be an all-out war now, but we just can't afford to lose more innocent lives. But I think you all have a lot to take away from this meeting today. Every speaker has spoken so well and given out so many minute yet important details about, you know, what's going on around the world and how we can counter that, you know, in our own capacity, in our small little towns and cities and villages, you know. So I think you've got a lot to take away. I hope that you'll continue to be involved with Newcastle Stop the War, wherever you have come from. If you're not already a member of Stop the War, or even PSC or an anti-war organization of your choice, you know, I think become a member and, yeah, keep going. And thank you again for having me here.
All right, thank you very much. We've had three very wide-ranging contributions, obviously going beyond the title of the meeting in Ukraine, because there's so much escalation around the world, and it's imperative that we unite in as big a numbers as possible. There is some time left.